Best Leaves Clues podcast with Robin Bailey and Al McDonald. Have you ever wondered what makes someone successful? What are they doing that's different? How do they achieve greatness? We believe that success leaves clues. In this series, we are interviewing very successful people from different walks of life to hear their stories. We'd like to remind our listeners that the views expressed in this podcast are those of our guests and not necessarily those shared by our hosts. Today's episode is sponsored by Life and Legacy Advisory Group. Discover our commitment to our clients. At Life and Legacy, building wealth, securing your family's future, giving back, and creating a lasting legacy are not just values, but a way of life. Let us guide you toward a future aligned with what matters most to you. We're also brought to you by Aria Benefits. If you're a business leader challenged with talent attraction, employee engagement, or supporting mental health, we can help. Use your benefits package as the key to unlock your workforce. Now here's your hosts, Robin Bailey and Al McDonald.
Hey everyone, thanks for joining us today again on the podcast. We're back recording in August. Summer's almost over, and every August for the fourth year in a row, I'm always reminded of Al is out there on his bike for a great cause. Al, thanks for joining me again as co-host. Maybe you can just tell us, how is your ride going so far?
The ride's going great. And yes, two things signal the end of summer: the exhibition starting up and the Great Cycle Challenge.
Yes.
So this is the fourth year that I will be participating in the Great Cycle Challenge, raising money for Sick Kids Hospital, kids with cancer. I've got a 750 kilometer goal for the month of August. I've already hit 180. So for the rest of the month, I'll be out there pedaling on the weekends trying to reach my goal.
All right. Well, great cause. And if you have the means, we sure would love your support. You can either go through Al's LinkedIn or my LinkedIn. And I'm glad you brought up the CNE, because that is a must for me every summer. There was one summer I tried the deep fried Twinkie. I haven't been back to the Twinkie, but I do look forward to the roasted corn and, of course, walking through the Midway with my life. So my wife, well, that would be appropriate. My life too. With us today is Jeff Ruby, founder and CEO of Newtopia. And Newtopia is a personalized health company that works closely with organizations and their employees to deliver highly personalized and targeted disease prevention solutions that are proven to reduce employer healthcare costs. And there's a whole lot more about Newtopia that we're going to get into today with Jeff. Jeff, welcome to the show.
Thanks. It's really great to be here. Rob and Al, thanks for having me.
Well, Jeff, if anyone has listened to our podcast, they've heard me say this a million times, but I'm going to keep repeating it because it's so cool. And it was something that was unexpected when I started the podcast is we keep meeting awesome people. And what happens when you meet awesome people is they introduce you to other awesome people. So I want to send a real quick shout out, a big shout out to Hyla Pollack for the introduction. And Jeff, I got a question for you. Have you had Hyla's chicken soup yet?
I think I probably have. Hyla's, you know, worked with me at Newtopia for many, many years.
Yeah.
Close to 10, it was part of really the bedrock here. And I'm quite sure in that time, I tried a little bit of her excellent cooking, but what shines the most is just her remarkable personality.
Yeah, wonderful person. She's become a friend since the episode we recorded with her, and just a wonderful person to have in our network. So again, thanks to Hyla. Well, Jeff, let's start at the beginning. Maybe you can tell us about what inspired you to start Newtopia. What's the backstory there?
Like many a health innovator, oftentimes there's a little bit of circumstance, a little bit of accident, and a little bit of personal story. And that's exactly what happened with me. I did not set out to start four health and health tech companies, but here I am. I did a JD MBA. I'm from Toronto and thought I wanted to follow some of the family members I have who have been quite successful in the legal field. I became a lawyer and just found it was the wrong vocational fit for me. I knew it pretty much immediately. And I had one of these weird weeks in my life where on a Monday, I walked into the managing partner of the firm I was working at and thanked him very much for the opportunity, but just said, this is my heart's not in it. He said, I totally understand, Jeff, go find your passion. And 3 days later, on Thursday of that week, I got a call from my dad, who'd been diagnosed with abdominal cancer at 54. And strangely, without necessarily knowing it at that moment, I found my passion, because it was really through my dad's diagnosis that I came to an aha moment that what we call healthcare has very little to do with keeping healthy people healthy and has almost everything to do with managing illness once it arrives. And I just thought that was a little bit backward. And I was a little bit mystified by the system that unfurled once he was ill, but horrified by the lack of anything keeping him out of it. except for his own wits. And so that led to a couple weeks later, I was sitting in Princess Margaret with him and other family members. And the first question out of my dad's mouth was, "Doc, how did I get this?" And I'll never forget the doc came back with, "You know, Mr. Ruby, a lot of this has to do with some unlucky genes and your lifestyle choices." Now, I have to say, in that moment, I had no idea what he was talking about, but I knew that that was probably something that I had to be concerned about. And I didn't understand where one could find out about their genes or about their lifestyle. And I just had this moment of, I could easily be in this chair. And where does anybody learn this? And so it also made me really curious about genes, lifestyle, cancer. What else does genes, lifestyle hit? And it turns out that it impacts just about every health issue, from obesity to chronic disease to cancer to heart disease. And so I just became really fascinated about how can we leverage individuals' information about genetics to inspire people to live healthy, to stay well and outside of the sick care system. And really, that's what I've been doing for the last 20 years.
It's such an inspirational story, you know, when someone is faced with that and you're sitting there thinking, okay, what can I do? And for you to go out and start researching and eventually start a company that's going to help other people, I find very inspirational. Jeff, I don't know if I shared with you when we met, but my brother passed away 3 years ago from complications of obesity for the last 9 years of his life.
I'm sorry.
Thank you. And he really struggled. And you know, his birthday had just passed on August 6th, and I was sitting there 3 years later, and I thought, oh, this will get easier eventually, and it's not. It's not getting any easier. It's hard. I find it's getting harder with the loss of him as I get older. And one of the frustrations that I have is, could I have done more? Could any of us have done more? So I find it very inspiring that there are people out there like you who get put into that situation. And obviously, you're much smarter than me. You're able to do that and go and start a company that says, hey, how do we help these people before they get to this stage? So very inspiring story. Thank you for sharing that.
No, look, thank you. And I think certain people thrive under pressure. I'm a type of person that likes to figure things out under intense pressure. And there's nothing like starting a company, especially when you're leveraging investors' dollars, not of your own, to work quick to solve something. And so, you know, you've heard this expression, it's like building the plane after you jumped off the cliff. That kind of pressure appeals to me to solve these kind of hairy problems. And so, yeah, I'm now on my fourth, all targeted at the same core issue of, can we prevent, reverse, and slow chronic disease by inspiring people to live healthy?
Jeff, in some of the other podcasts that we've had where we've been talking to people from the healthcare industry, the phrase sick care versus healthcare has come up a few times. And, you know, I never thought about it before, but it's absolutely right. Our healthcare system really is designed to deal with people after they're sick. And what you're talking about is to try and prevent that and do something before. But I guess one question that is really, really tough to answer is, how do we get there? You're doing it on your own, but, you know, you've got this huge system that isn't designed to do what you're doing. So how do we as a society move from sick care, which is what we're currently in, to healthcare, which is what you're trying to do?
That is
a big question.
It's a big, big question. And I should also say, I have the greatest regard for the physicians and healthcare providers and associated health professionals who genuinely train and work every day to go and help individuals. I think where the challenge lies is structurally and from an incentive perspective. The trick about sick care is that our sick care system values illness more than it does healthy living. And when you wrap your head around that and realize that until the value proposition changes toward a greater portion toward healthy living as opposed to illness, it's very difficult to change. And so where we've begun the effort, and I will say it has been slow and oftentimes very frustrating, is by trying to think through who's got the greatest incentive in the current fee structure and value system. And we believe that's insurance companies, whether it's public insurance companies, and in Canada, those would be the provincial health insurers and the federal government, or could be private insurers, or in the US, where we do a lot of our work, employers, large employers are their own insurance company. And so they have an incentive because they hold the risk for their employees or members. And so if there's an opportunity to impact the cost and lower it then there's a big win there for them. And so we believe that it starts with the insurers as opposed to anywhere else in terms of changing that incentive structure. And again, putting greater value on healthy living as opposed to illness.
Do you think there's any opportunity from what you've seen, or is this just too big a challenge to almost go from the bottom up, like convince individuals to, well, like you said, encourage people to change that value system, but also just take more responsibility and more awareness of their own personal situation? Like, is that even on the radar, or can that happen, or is that just too big a challenge?
It's tough. And we have some experience here. So at the outset of Newtopia, Newtopia's been around for 15 years now. In the first couple of years, we spent our time going direct to consumer exactly with that idea. Let's bring it to the people. And it turned out to be a little bit of naivete because what you realize and learn is that consumer behavior is typically about shorter term gratification and about immediate gratification. And the challenge with healthy living is that it's a bit of a longer road. It takes some time to build those wins. And so oftentimes, I think generally, individuals are motivated not to have a chronic disease or not to get sick, right? No one wants that. Yet the pressures against us from a big food, big corporate consumer goods, right? Is like there's a lot of messaging that goes against our ability to control those impulses in a quick way. And what ends up happening is the immediate gratification is pursuits toward aesthetic means, you know, weight loss or other short term. Whereas what we do and what's required is a longer term. And so what we found is that it's the partnership between the insurer who's responsible for the consumer and then the handoff. So if they're funding it and then there's an opportunity to work with the individual for a longer period of time, we've seen that as the magic formula to being able to really develop these new healthy habits and counter some of the immense pressure on individuals that has a dramatic impact on lifestyle and therefore health.
As you were saying that, I'm thinking about it. It's human nature. And I'm thinking about my, you know, when I go on to, oh, I'm going to eat this way for the rest of my life. And then shortly after that, something creeps in, you know, chips creep in. So you're right. It's just human nature that it's always shorter term. So I appreciate that from the top down approach that you're taking, there's going to be a lot more success there. But I was hoping you would talk about value-based care because we talked about that in our first call. And I wouldn't mind if you would link that to what Newtopia is doing a little bit differently out there right now.
Yeah, sure. I think it's an important component. So if we go back to the structural challenge and the incentives right now, for the most part, sick care is based on a fee-for-service model, which means individuals will go in when they're not feeling well, go and see a provider, doctor, or specialist of some sort. And for the time spent, there will be a transaction. Most of us don't see it. It happens behind the scenes, which is also a little bit of a challenge because it's completely, we're blind to it, but it's tied to throughput, not an outcome. And that means that the incentive to drive an outcome isn't there because the economics aren't tied to it. So value-based care or fee-for-value twists that around and says the economics are going to be on the outcome, not necessarily on the event itself. And so we started our economic orientation as a value-based group, which means that we only get paid if we drive an outcome proven to reduce risk. And the risks we're focused on are key metabolic risks, things like your waist circumference or blood pressure, your triglycerides, cholesterol, your A1C, etc. Only if we impact those do we get paid. But if we don't, even if we spend the time, we don't get paid. And so that value-based orientation has had a lot of talk track, and it is one of the key approaches that needs to take place for us to move toward a greater focus on prevention. We are definitely on the vanguard, especially in the habit change work that we do, but there's more and more evidence of it developing in the US, and Canada is slowly, but not quite there yet. But it will need to happen here as well, because we have a completely unsustainable fee-for-service system today.
We're usually at least a few years behind in terms of those trends from our US neighbors. As you were chatting about that, I'm thinking about my own clients for, you know, the last 20 years, what have they been struggling with? Higher drug costs, plans becoming prohibitive at some point. Well, what's the answer? Well, let's put in a drug cap. Okay, let's remove that drug from the formulary and push it somewhere else. And it's always these reactionary types of responses. So I would imagine if it's not already grabbing hold with Canadian employers, to your point, Jeff, this is going to be something they have to begin thinking about and should be thinking about on the prevention side to, you know, growing these healthier workforces so that we don't have this never-ending cycle of, hey, let's change the plan design. Let's cut something out of plan. Oh, let's change carriers until the honeymoon period is over and kick that rock down the road. So I think it's very important that you're starting to talk about these things.
Absolutely. And I think a giant catalyst that is already taking Canada by storm and will probably be, again, the forcing function for more discussion around pairing lifestyle change, prevention, and value-based outcomes is the introduction of the GLP-1 class of drugs. For those who don't know what that is, I'm talking about Ozempic or Mounjaro or Wegovy or Zepbound. You've definitely heard of those. And these drugs have a huge price tag in the US, lesser so, but still a fairly high price tag here. They become the number one drug in Canada as of 2023. And they were clinically designed to be taken alongside the kind of lifestyle therapy that we provide. Yet 99% of the prescribing doesn't today. And the challenge is that they all work quickly at the beginning, not for everyone, lots of side effects, but yet there's a plateau. And this drug has to be taken for life or it stops working. And so every insurer, private, public in Canada, especially when they open up their pre-authorization beyond type 2 diabetes, which is limited to today, is going to have a giant challenge of economics and sustainability without pairing the proper lifestyle and primary prevention alongside these drugs. And so, again, probably a broader conversation for another time, but I think the wave is upon us. And we've had lots of conversations with Canadian insurers and employers for the first time, really about intervening in this case.
Jeff, obviously, based on what we've talked about, what you're doing is a very different approach. It's a different mindset, a different way of thinking. You have to have encountered, and just outside of the business part of it, just from thinking about people getting their heads around this, you have to have encountered a lot of challenges along the way. Can you talk about maybe some of the biggest ones and what you've done to overcome those?
Yeah, so many challenges. And to say that we've solved them all would be ridiculous insofar as, you know, we're really pushing a primary prevention agenda against the sick care system. And so some of the challenges we've had, again, as I suggested, we started our orientation direct to consumer, learning that consumers don't want to invest in this for themselves and won't. Failed there. We then moved to working with Canadian employers and insurers pre-GLP-1, that's wave I just discussed, and learned that the incentive for them to invest in this really wasn't that high because most of the cost savings we knew we could generate are felt at the provincial, at the public side. And then we also realized that the provincial insurers weren't really focused on prevention, stuck in sick care with all the challenges that we hear about, and certainly don't contract with startup-y companies like us oftentimes. And so failed there, moved to the US, realized a different and greater opportunity, but that opportunity took a whole different approach. And we're very fortunate to spend 3 years in a large-scale randomized control trial, bet the entire company on that trial and the results that we yielded. It was the catalyst for us to start really moving. But then as we were moving, we ran into the pandemic, as the world did, and our entire sales channel changed. We needed to start, you know, expanding beyond employers toward health plans. And we continue to really figure out how can we know what we do works, and we know we go at risk for it. Where are the innovators and where are the greatest opportunities to scale is a daily challenge for us. And so, you know, this kind of work is, you know, no 2 days are the same, and problem solving is 24/7.
Well, obviously, based on, you know, the challenges that you just described, it's clear you've got to have that passion and the why that you talked about at the very beginning to continue on. I'm sure a lot of people would have maybe packed it in by now and given up or gone down a different path, but it sounds like you've persevered, and good for you for continuing to do that.
Thank you. Yes. I mean, there's a little bit of insanity that has to go into believing that you and your team can change a $6 trillion system in North America. But yet, that's the only way to change the world is to keep pushing and trying and making inroads and creating more and more waves.
It's not just the size, right? It's also the fact that that thinking that you talked about is so entrenched. And it's just the way we've always done it. It's such a huge obstacle to overcome.
And while saying that, I'm still a huge believer that if you bet on people, mm-hmm. right, if you believe that there is a will to do it and you inspire them to do it and turn them into their own flywheel of success, I think wonderful things can happen. And oftentimes, unfortunately, our commercial system is a bit like the casino. We're betting against the consumer. We're hoping they're going to fail. In fact, sick care only works if we get sick. And so we're counting on everyone to get sick in the system that we have now, aka the casino always wins. And I actually prefer to bet on the individual.
And, you know, if people didn't have these really big, audacious ideas that they were working on, and you called it maybe you have to be a little crazy to pursue them until the end, the world would look very different today. So I'm very thankful there are people out there like you, Jeff, who are trying to make a difference. Al will remember this. Last summer, we sat down with a former podcast guest who has now turned into a friend, Christine Song. Christine is a true celebrity in the tech HR space in Toronto, and she gave us a really good piece of advice. She says, I love listening to the podcast. Your guests are great, always really interesting, always learn something, but try to get to know the person behind the role. So on that note, I thought I would ask you, and it might seem a little bit random, but I think it'll tell us a lot about who Jeff is. What does your perfect Tuesday look like?
So I would say it's not terribly different than Monday through the other days, but perfect Tuesday is I've woken up after 8 to 9 hours of sleep. I'm an epic sleep proponent and fan. I think it's the most important thing we can do. And then I like to start my day with a swim. That's an activity that I've always done. And then, you know, come home, and I've got 3 almost teenage kids now. And so have breakfast with them and get them off to school. And I walk to work, which is very fortunate, but it's just a lifestyle choice to be able to navigate that way, connect with my team. We're all virtual around North America. And so spend a lot of time on Zoom chats and calls. Generally, I'm a pretty healthy eater. I work on a treadmill. I'm actually standing on it. I don't have it on because you all get a little nauseous by my pointing. So I'm kind of moving all day. And if I can squeeze a Barry's Bootcamp class in at the end of that Tuesday before heading home for dinner with the family and then chilling out in the evening, that's a perfect Tuesday for me.
Well, you are definitely walking your talk in terms of that healthy lifestyle. And it's interesting getting to know you. One thing I will say about you, you are very authentic. Who you see is who you get when you talk to Jeff. So I appreciate, hopefully we're on our path to a friendship, just like we are with Hyla as well. Well, it's the point in the episode where we've really come to enjoy because everyone's answer is a little bit different. And I think you've really begun to answer the question. Al has a signature question that we'd love to throw at you, Jeff, if you're ready for it.
Yeah.
And before I do, I am going to just swing back to that answer that you just made about your perfect Tuesday. And the one thing that I really liked that you brought up was sleep, 8 to 9 hours, because I do think, and especially when you're talking about fast-paced businesses and CEOs, there's this almost this badge of honor that you can get away with 5 or 6 hours of sleep. And I'm glad that you brought that up because more and more just the effect of sleep and the positive effects it has on your body, I think it can't be understated. So I'm glad you brought that up. So yeah, let's jump into it. The question for you is this: a society grows great when old persons plant trees in whose shade they will never sit. So can you talk about those proverbial trees that you might be planting?
Yeah, it's a really meaningful question to me, because if you really root back, what I do every day is try to build something that had my dad had it, he'd still be here. And I now have 3 kids of my own. And so I've now been able to answer the question I couldn't answer in the oncologist's office for myself. And I certainly want to make sure that my kids have that answer for themselves, which is how to achieve the greatest health span possible, not just lifespan. But more importantly, you know, the trees that I'm planting is try to build something that could literally help the 7 billion people around the world all achieve that for themselves and their families as well.
Well, that's a great answer. I'm sure the work that you're doing and the efforts that you're putting in are going to affect a lot of people down the road as you become more and more successful.
Thank you.
Well, Jeff, this has been a real pleasure. Hyla, you are a gem, my dear. Thank you for the introduction. And like I said, really good people know other really good people. So we're going to keep this going. Thanks for joining us today and sharing your story. What's the best way for people to reach out to you if they have questions about yourself or what you're doing at Newtopia?
I'd say probably LinkedIn is the best and easiest way, or you can find us at www.newtopia.com.
Okay, awesome. Well, that does it for today's episode. We really enjoyed this conversation. As always, we hope you did too. If you have any questions for Al or myself, please feel free to give us a call or by joining the conversation on LinkedIn. Success leaves clues, my friends. We'll see you next time.